Okay, so welcome to this afternoon's meditation class, even though there is a Satipatthana workshop going on. We're still keeping the usual 3 to 4:15 meditation class here. We do this as many times as regularly as we can so that people rely upon it throughout the world. Even though there may be other things happening here, remember, because this is shared with so many different countries, that we're not sure what holidays they're having over there. And even though it's 3 o'clock here in Perth, Western Australia, sometimes it's really early in the morning. In places like United States or Europe, they still manage to log in and join in because it's important to them, it's valued. So anyway, welcome everybody here. And the usual way of doing things, this is the ongoing class, the first classes in meditation, the introductory classes. They are being held in the main hall, I do believe, today. Is that correct? The main hall over the community hall, it's called. And this is the ongoing class. We do split those two classes up just because if sometimes people come here for the first time, some of the things which are mentioned may be a bit too deep. Some of the time we spend is a bit too long, and therefore they miss out on just getting that lovely introduction so that they can come into meditation and find it's not hard, it's easy to do. So many people say that the meditation is difficult and hard, but a lot of time is because they don't do it properly. You know, sometimes a person once told me that they can only meditate for 5 or 10 minutes and they have a nice 5 or 10 minute time, but then they find out their mind goes wandering all over the place and gets very restless, and they wonder why, and how can we overcome those sorts of problems? And of course, the way to do that is just to have, and I say 40 minutes, 45 minutes meditation we have here on a Saturday afternoon. What is 45 minutes anyway, 40 minutes anyway? It's just 4 sessions of 10 minutes. So you just sit there, you can only meditate for 10 minutes. Sit down there, close your eyes, meditate for 10 minutes. At the end of 10 minutes, you can open your eyes, then immediately close them again. That's another 10 minutes. This is not a joke. It's just using the psychology of the mind. In that break between the first 10 minutes and the next 10 minutes, you can always sort of adjust your posture, move your legs this way, that way, just to get yourself comfortable again, and then carry on. Little by little, we're trying to make sure that the idea that we can't do things is wrong. It's amazing what you can do, and especially with meditation, because meditation is a natural process of the body and the mind. It doesn't depend on what you think you can do, what you think you can't do. It just happens, if you do it properly. And how does it happen? It's like a person saying, I can't grow up. I can't sort of, and I go from a young sort of 8-year-old to an 18-year-old to a 28-year-old. Of course you can. It's just allowing things to happen. Letting go and just watching, just as the body develops, how the mind develops. When you plant something in the garden, you see that as long as you're protecting it and keeping it well nourished, you know, with the water, the sunlight, and the shade when it needs it, then you find that it flourishes very well. And your job is just to find out the causes which make for the mind to become peaceful. I'm not saying to focus on anything, to focus on the breath, or to develop insight, or to develop enlightenment, or to get rid of problems. I'm saying to develop peace and stillness. That's something natural, which I hope you can understand, which I hope that you can feel. When I say that, sometimes you give lots of examples. I'm sure that many of you have had experiences in mountains or in deserts, in wilderness areas here in Australia. And there are some places, we don't even need to go that far. Even in Jhana Grove, Bodhinyana Monastery, where I hang out, where I live, even some of those places, it's so peaceful, it's so still. And often, Often after I've given a talk there to the monks in the evening in the hall, and I walk out of that hall, and just on the short distance between the hall and my hut or my cave, that on the way there I just pause. And everything is just so still in that forest at night time. Because of its stillness, its peace, I'm just aware of that. It's so powerful. You know, sometimes that peace is just so, I don't know what to call it, loud. In other words, it's just so overwhelming, you can't resist it. It's just so right around you, inside of you, all over the place, and it's just so demanding of attention, peace. You really get to know it. Whenever you are aware of something like peace, silence, in this moment, it's very powerful. It's so powerful that you just allow yourself to be drawn into it, into that peace. And the mind becomes peaceful, and the body becomes very happy, and the mind becomes very bright. Did you do anything? The answer is no. You did nothing. You just allowed the peace which was there already around you to draw you in and make you incredibly peaceful. So a lot of times I use similes like that to say the path of meditation is a very natural path, and the best way of developing deep meditation is to do nothing. You know what happens, and then people start to try to do nothing. I've got to do nothing. Remember that. Do nothing. Do nothing. Stop it. Stop it. And of course that's more doing stuff. So the skill of meditation is to be able to find a quiet place where you feel where you feel safe. Because only places where you feel safe can you let go. We know that no one's going to disturb you, no one's going to tell you what to do. It's not going to be dangerous for you. You can sit there nice and quietly, very peacefully, and have a really quiet time. And no one's going to harm you. No one's going to hurt you because you've got your eyes closed a lot of the time. But over in this place over here, we do have precepts, so no one ever gets harmed in here. Instead, we get peaceful, relaxed, free. And when we feel that freedom, that peacefulness, that relaxation, it's a beautiful experience. So much so that then, when you feel that stillness, that peace, that is so powerful, that then you understand that all of the definitions which we have of mindfulness. There's a big word these days. It never used to be that big a word, but now it's so powerful. You can make a career out of it, make a heap of money out of it. Never want to do that. But to know what mindfulness is, mindfulness is in this moment, right here, with peacefulness, with stillness. You're peaceful. And your mind, when it's peaceful, has no obstacles to what's happening right now. You're aware of what's happening now, fully aware, taking away all the disturbances, distractions. Most of those disturbances and distractions we notice, that's the opposite of peace. Thinking, restlessness, anxiety, worry, depression is where we just got no energy at all, we're just dull. Call that contracted mind, very small. And we have this beautiful sense of peacefulness, stillness. It's like a huge mind with no limits to it. It's totally free. Now, but it doesn't go anywhere. It just is here right now. That is what mindfulness means. Being peaceful, silent, calm, right in this moment. Yeah, I think you can understand why. That when you try to be peaceful, are you peaceful when you try? When you try and concoct it, try and just fake it, make it look like it's there. No, just let go and you can listen to peace. It's there in the background. But when you start listening to it, it comes into the front of your mind. And it just is there. Beautiful, peaceful, safe, reassuring. One person who came here last night, and he was saying that he was going off. He's managed to get a flight overseas, don't know how, but he's going over to the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. And they reminded me that when I was 18, it's a long time ago now, I went off to that Yucatan Peninsula in Guatemala. It's the same peninsula, just they drew a line. This is Mexico, this is Guatemala, because these places are just jungles. And I remember just going up to one of these pyramids in the Tikal. It was an old Mayan complex. No people knew what it was there for. Just a bunch of pyramids in the middle of the rainforest. And of course, I decided to go there. Don't know why. But anyway, it's a long journey. And just climbing up one of those pyramids in the jungle. They're different than the pyramids in the deserts, because the difference between being on top of the pyramid in the jungle and being on the bottom of that pyramid. In the bottom of the pyramid, you're in the rainforest. There's all sorts of animals, mosquitoes, cicadas. It's noisy down there. And the air is very dense and unpleasant, I must admit. Hot, feel like enclosed. But then you go to the top of one of those pyramids, just imagine it. Imagine you being in a rainforest, very sort of dense atmosphere, humid, hardly any wind, because there's too many trees and bushes and everything there. And then you manage to find one of these huge pyramids, and you walk up one. It's a long way up. When you get to the top, you find you're above the tree line. So you're above the forest now. You're like out of the forest. And the air is just so beautiful. You get winds, breezes. The air is fresh up there. You don't hear the sounds of the jungle animals or the cicadas and the many, many thousands of different insects making their noises. When you get to the top there, you can also see forever. I like that simile, seeing forever. Whichever direction you look, down on the bottom of the pyramid of the jungle, you can only see a few meters to the next bush or the next tree. Up the top, you can see over everything. And I knew the way I'd came that day to get there. It was only about 20 miles or something. But you know, it took a long time to get there because it's rainforest. But then, when you look above, you can see where you came from, you can see further. See this beautiful little village, which was in the center of a lake. It's called Flores, I still remember it, in the Yucatan Peninsula. It was only very small then. And just to see it from a distance, and you can look even further. It was like there was nothing between you and infinity in all directions. An infinity, not bounded, free, gorgeous air, peaceful, nothing worrying you, no sounds. That was a symbol of mindfulness. Peace, stillness. And up there, because there was no obstacles, nothing disturbing you, peaceful, comfortable, it became one of the great similes in my practice for meditation. Here we don't need great pyramids to go up to free ourselves from the jungle. We just go inside. Inside this moment, inside your body, inside your mind. Go deep inside this moment. And deeper you go, it's like the clearer the air is, symbolically. The more peace you feel, the more freedom. It seems weird when you go inside, you get more space. I was mentioning this to some of the monks a day or two ago, that it's like when I was a kid, you know, I used to watch these episodes of Doctor Who and the TARDIS. I was really surprised to see that that's still going 40, 50 years later. But the whole idea of this little box where Doctor Who used to live. But you go inside and it's huge inside. Huge and comfortable. And that's like the mind. Sometimes people identify the brain as the mind. Of course, the mind is much bigger than the brain. We go inside this moment, which seems tiny at first. You go inside of that, right inside of it. And it's huge in there. With all the space in the world. It's like going up the pyramid. In the top, all the space. But the pyramid's point is almost just so narrow, so small at the top, wide at the base. That's maybe what it looks like at the bottom. We go inside the mind, and it's huge, vast, and peaceful, just like space itself. Reassuring, safe, vast, and trouble-free. And you don't need to pay millions of dollars to go for 5 minutes in a spacecraft to experience space. Instead, you just come to the Buddhist Society of West Australia on a Saturday afternoon. Much more effective, much cheaper, and much safer. Space out, inside. Okay, that's the little introduction to set the tone, I hope. So now we can actually do some meditation. And once again, if anyone comes here for the introduction to meditation class, that is being held in the community hall. This is the ongoing class. So if you want to get yourselves nice and comfortable, then we can start the meditation. Here we go. And before the meditation, I will lead the first 15-20 minutes, and then towards the end, I will interrupt again and say it's getting close to the end of the meditation, in order to bring you out of the meditation in a comfortable, gentle way. And we intend to finish just before 4, and then we have some questions for 15 minutes. I'm not going to go over this time, we're really going to try and be strict on that, that after the questions are finished, because to give you a break before you come back to finish off with Ajahn Brahmani's class. So you close your eyes. With your eyes closed, now you can start to feel this moment, what it's like. Amazing, just the first thing which I could notice is it's warm. My body likes cold, born in UK. But this is fine because I know it won't change the warmth in this room. Because it won't change, I will soon not notice it anymore. So whenever you feel anything which is a little bit uncomfortable, just stay with it. Many times, many occasions, it vanishes by itself. The background noise tends to move further away from you. It feels like it's you're still here, but it's distant. And then it vanishes totally. But I do look after my body, make sure it's not going to be painful, so I do check on my legs. How have I crossed my legs? I know that if I keep it like they are right now, it will be painful in a moment. So I make final adjustments of my legs and my butt. My back. Just getting everything ready to be able to put my body aside. I mean, that just metaphorically. I'm not going to float outside of my body or do astral traveling or anything like that. Just going to let the body disappear, which it does when it's comfortable. make sure the back is just right, especially the waist. Just a big stretch there. Oh, that feels great. I deliberately fidget a lot at the very beginning of the meditation to make sure I'm in a good position. It's better to fidget now than fidget in the middle or towards the end, and that's very disturbing then. The beginning is just nothing much at all. And I get my body nice and comfy. Making sure my hands are comfy. Got a little bit of stiffness in my neck, so I just twist the neck around a bit to ease that tension. When you are mindful, aware in this moment, listening or feeling, giving all your attention to the senses which you're experiencing right now, you pick up so much, so many tips of how to relax the body. This is just an example. I realized my neck was a bit sore, and if I kept it like that, it would get really sore. So I just did a quick sort of movement, because I know from my own experience doing that many times, that relaxes or loosens any tension or blockages. And I know my neck will not be sore anymore. It's how you learn. Mindfulness allows you to have feedback. Try this, get the feedback. It works. Remember it, you learn from that. As you know, lastly, I go up to my face. I usually do that because too many people used to say they got tension in their forehead, headaches, or tension around their eyes or their mouth. So be aware of that area. And of course, where those tensions come from, that's only because of your emotional world is played out on the face. You just look at a person, you can tell whether they're relaxed or they're anxious. And you can feel that yourself. And you learn from that trial and error and the feedback how to relax the muscles around your eyes. Relaxing the muscles around your nose. Around your mouth. Until your face becomes so at ease, you notice your mind becomes more at ease as well. Those disturbing emotions are settled, relaxed, made at ease. And when they are, you can feel your whole body. Instead of just one part of the body, it's like I can now kind of feel most of my body, the legs nicely folded, the butt, the back, the shoulders, arms, hands, and head, all pretty comfortable. There it is. I spent 5 or 10 minutes doing this, and it's never ever time wasted. Keeps the body comfortable, and it teaches me this skill base of mindfulness and kindness, what I called kindfulness. That skill base which allows the body to really get so at ease it's healthy, and it's also relaxed, feels good. It's that same skill base which will now be used on my mind, on my inner world. Seeing what my inner world feels like, relaxing it, putting it at ease with kindness, and the feedback telling me, is my mind peaceful or not? So just even think the word peace. Imagine you've gone to one of the most peaceful places in the whole world for you. What it felt like. I remember going to some of those caves in Sri Lanka and Thailand. They're so peaceful. You go inside there and everything just calms down. It's like you're shutting off the world for a while. The silence is so attractive. Close your eyes and there is not just stillness. There's nothing disturbing you at all. You are here, aware of this moment. There are no problems. Nothing to do, nothing to fix, nothing to answer. It's just here, at peace. So what causes peace in your mind? How do you arouse mindfulness? You don't do it. If you try and arouse it and make it happen, you'll disturb it. The job of a meditator is to make sure you don't interfere with things. You disappear. You let go. You let this moment be. It may not be the best moment you've ever experienced in the world right now, but it's more than good enough. And the more you look at this moment with kindness, the sense of opening the door of your heart to this moment, and letting it be, not wanting anything more, not fighting, not trying to get things, attain things, or make things happen, but just being here, in this moment. The more you do that, it's actually you're not doing, the more peaceful you can feel your mind. Peace is like the sign you're going in the right direction. The more peace, the more insight, the more feedback, the peace is delicious. It's true that there comes a time when you can be aware of your breath happening now. The breath is useful because it does tie you into this present moment. You cannot be aware of the breath happening in 2 minutes' time. You don't remember the breath a few seconds ago even. Just noticing the breath come into your body, mind, and mind, right now. And the breath go out again. It focuses you in the present moment. And it also just stops you having busyness to do. You don't need to think and plan or assess. The breath is one of the simplest things in the world to watch, to be aware of. And you stay with that breath until it does become a joyful breath. You can feel the delight of peace. having nothing to do, nothing to worry about in the whole world. Sitting here comfortably, safe, at ease, resting. For those who get lost in fantasies or thoughts, the mind gets restless. It's because they're not valuing and appreciating the freedom of now, the peace, the beauty. I just remember just sitting on those pyramid tops, sitting as long as I wanted, just watching for hours, great distances, no obstacles at all, freedom. You soon get incredibly peaceful. I'm going to be quiet now until it comes close to the end of the meditation, and I'll start speaking again. getting close to the end of this meditation period now. How does your mind feel? How peaceful are you? What's the effect? These days I call like afterglow of having meditated. When you know the joy, the delight of a really peaceful mind. It's byproduct, the health and comfort it gives to your body. You will value that. It's one of the best things you do all day. This is not some belief, it's direct experience. You feel it. There with you. Now, you feel your mind and you feel the body. Soon comes time to get out of the meditation. We always do it slowly and gently. So I will ring the gong 3 times. And when the gong finishes sounding for the 3rd time, it is a signal to come out from the meditation. Now, as usual, there is opportunities for asking questions. But I know that if you get very peaceful in your meditation, sometimes that the mind is too quiet to have a question form. So you can go. That's one of the reasons why that one of the deep answers to all questions is when you're peaceful and still, all questions disappear. But anyway, I'll ask, get the first answer from overseas usually. And then, thank you so much, you've just done 4 questions, excellent. So the first question, and then afterwards I'll see if there's any from the floor here. If the breathing pattern is irregular and there are much gaps between breaths, so difficult to focus on the breath, and how to develop concentration. First of all, you don't focus on concentration, please. That's one of the wrong words, one of the wrong translations. For samadhi, it doesn't mean concentration, it means peace, stillness. When you ask that question, when the breath is irregular, how do you develop stillness? It's a pretty obvious answer. You don't disturb anything. You let things be. And then the stillness is the most powerful thing there. I was just telling a few people recently that because I did some sutta classes in the last retreat I taught in Jhana Grove, one of the descriptions of a very peaceful mind, of enlightened mind, of insight, was, they called it Sabbasankara Samatha, the samathaing of all this busyness, for want of another better word. And that's the samatha practice, is stillness, settling it so there's no business to be done anymore. And that's the same, that's our, if you like, a goal for meditation. Not concentration, but stillness. So if the breath is irregular, it's not a problem at all. Let it be irregular, and the only one breath you're concerned about or focused on is the very one happening now. And I'm over 70 years old now, and my breath has been looking after me without any problems for 70 years. I trust my breath. If it wants to pause for a while, fine by me. If it wants to go in sort of very fast, fine by me. You do what you need to do, because my breath knows how to breathe. And it's proved that to me by 7 decades of not causing any problem whatsoever. So that little way means that we can just leave the breath alone. We don't control it, but we're aware of it. And we're aware of it without controlling it. It just gets like the waves on the ocean. The little ripples on a calm day. They come in, they go out all by themselves, and it's peaceful. Because you don't have anything to do with them. No busyness. Don't you work hard enough as it is in your job at work? Don't you have extra responsibilities at home? Use meditation as a way of relaxing, as a holiday, as a relaxation, not as more work to be done. Now I did promise, is there any, that's the first question here. There's 3 more questions which I will answer, but any questions from the people here on the floor, here in Dhammaloka? Yes, at the back, yes. Yeah, good. What's that one? Great. Yes?
I've got a quote from Saint Francis.
Yes? Yes? Yeah, okay. What we're looking for is what is looking. It's a quote from St. Francis of Assisi. Is, again, that's the idea of what is mindfulness. You find that actually that's not the end of the journey. When you find what is looking, you'll find that just what it looks at affects what is looking. And so after a while, you know, what is looking becomes very still and peaceful. And what you're seeing becomes very still and peaceful. And little by little, each one of those, the looker and the what is looked at, you know, inside the mind, becomes more and more refined. Just like, going back to that simile, because I mentioned it earlier, of the pyramid. When you're on top of that pyramid, what you're looking at, there's nothing there to see. Just emptiness in all directions, infinity. And infinity is the same word as nothing, emptiness. It's not defined, it's not bounded, it's not even comprehensible if you really understand what infinity means. It's just, it's real, but it can't be put into words. Words limit it and make it finite. So little by little, it's just when we see the objects, and those objects becomes the one which is observing this. This is, for those of you who don't know this, is very refined Buddhism, refined meditation. These are the immaterial states after the jhanas, when your mind starts to vanish slowly with great bliss and profundity. It's because what you're watching is so still and peaceful that the one which is watching also vanishes. It's more and more refined. So we're not what we're looking for. After a while, What we search for in life, we usually find something much better, more unexpected. That's some really nice stuff. Okay, I'll leave that with you for a moment because I've got another couple of questions here. From Sweden, Veronica. I wonder if it can suddenly happen that a psychosis takes place in meditation if there is some trauma in life, or if it can help instead. If a trauma happens, these are like memories from the past, and to get that trauma to reappear now, it usually needs something to trigger it, some sort of similar experience right now. If the meditation is done gently, peacefully, calmly, with lots of kindness, then it's very unlikely that the negative traumas can be triggered in meditation. What can happen though, that trauma has got two tastes to it, two sides to it. We always talk about trauma as something negative. There are sometimes some experience in your life is so incredibly amazing, powerful, that sometimes those get triggered. And these are experiences where we're entirely positive, beautiful, blissed out, and changing of life, and you don't want to not have them. These are the traumas of deep meditation. I use the word trauma because there's no other word close enough to describe them. The trauma being something powerful experience, unforgettable. Why does all unforgettable, terrible experience have to be negative? These are incredibly powerful, like if you see great nimittas or experience the jhanas or something, wow, that stays with you forever. It's beautiful, but incredibly powerful too. So, but if a person is meditating properly, I say this, those negative traumas won't reoccur. Devachan Brahm from Florida, have you heard of the dark night of the soul? If so, what guidance can you offer on how to practice mindfulness for someone going through this? Number one in Buddhism, we don't have a soul, a self, a sense of me. And that actually gives you the answer. Why is it that we identify with experiences and make it my pain, my difficulty? The whole point is not to try and find some beautiful, blissful place for us to live happily ever after in, or not to try and perfect this person which people, for example, which they recognize, oh, it's Ajahn Brahm. It's not to try and perfect this and make sure he has better jokes to tell on a Friday evening. No, it's learning how to let this all disappear and vanish. So the dark night of a soul, that is very much when you have a person there, a person who's striving to achieve something, to get something, rather than the path of letting things be, making peace with things, being gentle. And you usually find that anything which ends up or passes through dark night of soul stuff, you'll find that sort of stuff will disappear, won't happen at all, when there's more peace and gentleness and kindness in your practice. It's all because you want something, and it's the wanting causes the pain. When there's nothing you want, there's nothing you ever suffer. Craving, dunha, the cause of suffering. A nice one is from Jesse. I have a difficult and noisy neighbor. Every day hammering in early morning and late night. Have been tolerating them for more than 2 months now. Why my noisy neighbor did so many bad things, they still have good things happening in their lives. Where is the karma? One of the answers to that question is one of the prisoners in jail, which I used to teach many years ago, and he was really trying to do something good in his life while he was in jail. He would get up early in the morning, before he had to, and sit in his cell and meditate. And he complained to me that every morning, soon one of the prison officers, or all the prison officers, found out what he was doing. He was meditating in the morning. We can't allow that. That's what he thought anyway. So they would open the little viewing window in his cell. They had bars across it. And with the flashlight, they would rub against the bars to make a loud noise, shine the flashlight right into his eyes until they got him to open his eyes and disturb him. And then they would go off and leave. And he said every morning they would do that, just to disturb him for no other reason than, you know, he must be enjoying himself too much meditating, which is quite true. And he complained to me and he said, look, Ajahn Brahm, I've tried to tell him, look, I'm not disturbing you, I'm just meditating. Can you just be quiet yourself? Let me meditate. And they just hit those doors even louder. He said, I've tried to talk kindly to them, but they just won't listen. Can you do that, Ajahn Brahm? Tell them, please. Just now leave me alone. And so I told him, I said, look, I could go and complain, but I said, you're missing the point there. Next time in the morning they bang those doors and bang on a shine a flashlight in your eyes, please just ignore them. Make peace with that. Be kind to that. Be gentle with that. The noise is only lasts a second. And it's gone. Don't move. See it come, see it go. Don't want anything else in the whole world. Then you'll find you'll be at peace all the time, even with noise. It's what I understood Ajahn Chah always meant. It's never the noise disturbs you. It's you who disturb the noise. In the moment, it's just a bang. It goes away again pretty quickly. And then you're peaceful again. But if you think, they shouldn't do this. This is unfair. Why me? Can't somebody stop this? I'm trying to meditate. You're missing the point. Meditation is learning how to make peace with things. Open the door of your heart to this moment. It's not physically harming you. So let it be. And then you find that they can't harm you. And that's what happened to that prisoner. He said, just thank you, Ajahn Brahm, it worked. After a week or two, they got so tired of banging their flashlight on the grate, and I wouldn't move, I wouldn't do anything. So they left me alone. And then you can meditate however long you wanted then. That's how it works. Okay, so thank you from Jesse for that question. Hope it answers you. Just ignore it. Any questions? More? Okay, so great. I've got 4:14 on the clock, and that was my goal, to do it 4:15, to actually end on time for a change. So we can now just bow the three times to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then I'll vacate the room so that we can set it up again for Ajahn Brahmali's second half of the first lesson of the Satipatthana Sutta.